After wishing everyone a Shavuot Tov and a meaningful fast, what we want to do today for Parshas Pinchas, I'm sorry, for Parshas Matos, Pinchas was yesterday, so we'll move on to Parshas Matos. Of course, the Parsha begins with Nedarim, and we'll have to leave that for Tuesday because I found it's extremely complicated, the laws of vows and pledges. But what we do want to do is relevant to Halacha. So today's shiur is more of like a halacha kind of shiur. And it's based on the parasha B'nai Gad U'B'nai Reuven. Now you may remember that there were 2.5 shvatim that wanted to inherit the land Eivar Yarden, which means on the eastern side of the Yarden. They didn't want to cross the Yarden westward into the land of Israel. And as a result, they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Ha'aretz Asher Hika Hashem Lifnei Adas Yisrael Eretz Miknehi. The land that we have conquered in Eivar Yarden is very good for grazing. Ulavadecha Mikneh. And we have sown buck, we have flocks, we have sheep. And it's great for us to live in a land that's so perfect for grazing. And therefore, imatzanu chen beinecha, they ask Moshe Rabbeinu if we found favor in your eyes. Let us inherit this land. Al tavirenu et hayarden, don't give us the linkage to the rest of Bnei Yisrael who are crossing over the Yarden. We'll stay right here. Now, you remember the parasha. What was Moshe afraid of? If all of Bnei Yisrael would cross the Yarden, they would have to conquer how many nations? 7 nations, you remember? That's a major military battle. And then 2.5 shvatim, which is a major chunk of Klal, would be left behind on the eastern side of the Yarden, and they're not going to participate
in the fight,
in the military battle, correct? That's not good. And furthermore, the very fact that 2.5 shvatim would not be interested in crossing the Yarden. Now keep in mind the bulk, the primary Kedusha sanctity of Eretz Yisrael is on the other side of the Yarden. That's on the western side, the western bank of the Yarden. What does this, you know, if you can imagine Moshe Rabbeinu, there are red bells going off here. What was he nervous of? What was he associating this whole parasha with? Zev?
He's not considered Shiva La'aretz, maybe.
Right, but what parsha, what episode that we just read about not too many weeks ago? And yeah, right, it's 3 weeks from now. We're going to commemorate the event of the Meraglim, the Chet of the Meraglim, right, on Tisha B'Av, the Bechil Adoros. Because the people of Israel didn't want to cross the Yarden. They didn't want to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And that's what happened in the aftermath of the Chet HaMeraglim, B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven, are coming forward, and half a Shevet Menashe as well, and they're saying, you know what? We don't want to cross the Yarden. We don't need Eretz Yisrael. We don't need the land of Israel. So Moshe Rabbeinu gets very, very nervous. Lama Tenionis Lev B'nai Yisrael. Again, you're agitating the people, and it's a repeat performance of the original Chet of the Meraglim. And Hine Kamtem Tachas Avosechem. Now keep in mind, all those who were guilty, that whole generation of the sin of the Meraglim had all died out. Because you remember there was a terrible divine decree that they would all die in the Midbar. And now we're up to the next generation. But Moshe Rabbeinu is afraid that history repeats itself and the children are now guilty of the same sins of their fathers. Kamtem tachas avoseichem. And he calls him with a very harsh language, Tarbut Anashim Chot'im. Your entire culture is one of sinners. Now the ball is in whose court? Who has to defend themselves now? B'nai Gad? B'nai Reuven? Now they have to say, no, that's not what we had in mind. Heaven forbid. And they respond, no. We're not trying to get out of our responsibility to fight the battle together with Eretz Yisrael, with the rest of Bnei Yisrael to conquer the land. And they say, Anachnu nechaletz chushim lifnei Bnei Yisrael. What does it mean to be a chalutz, chalutzim? You know, in the modern history of the Zionist movement, there were the chalutzim. Who are the chalutzim? What do you say? The first settlers, right? The first settlers will be the first fighters. You know, every military campaign has the front line fighters, you know, those are the guys who really put their lives on the line. And then you have what's called the Oref, you know, the guys in the back. What's it called in English?
The support, the
cavalry, you know, these are the guys who'll take up the slack. We're going to go Chalutzim. And Moshe says, you know what? I'll make a condition with you. Im ta'asuna tatvar, if your commitment is real, im te'chaltzu lifnei Hashem l'mokom, you'll go first, you'll be in the four, you know, the front lines, then I'll give you this land. Horisho toivav mi panav, I want you to be part of the military battle until we subdue our enemies. V'nich b'sharetz lifnei Hashem, and once the land is conquered, v'achar, and then later toshuv, then you go back and you'll inherit the land. But I left out four words. Because the next four words to close this verse in Perek Lamed Bet is very easy to remember. Kaminyan Lev. This is the heart of Judaism. The next four words of Moshe's presentation is going to be the central idea, the theme of our study today. Now, how much time do you have? Because we really want to do a good job in studying the next four words. Can you stay till the fast is over? After all, you don't have any other pressing appointments, do you? So, today's a day off. You're fasting. They should give you a day off today.
I think that was in Tisha B'Av.
Oh, only on Tisha B'Av. Okay. And also, it's a Nidche today, you know, so maybe they want you back at work. So you'll see how long you could stay. Now my policy, Ari, this is the first time you're with us, so my policy is, and Jeremy, I think you'll vouch for this, I'm pretty good about this, whenever you have to go, you go. You know, we hate to see you go, you know. Pack your bags, and that's it. V'yisem nekiyim me'ashem u'mi'Yisrael. Now the word nekiyim literally means to clean up your act. But you know that whiteness, the color white in the Torah and Chazal, and even Lahavdil in the secular world, is considered purity. Purity means, in this context, you know, somebody might suspect you of being a little bit soiled, maybe you're not clean, maybe you're not living up to your commitment, maybe you're not totally honest. That's why, who knows, who can tell me the answer to this question? This is a quiz question. Of all the Shvatim in Klal Yisrael, and I'm not talking about B'nai Gad or B'nai Reuven, which Shevet was involved in commerce, in industry, in what we call import and export business? Zvulun. Excellent. I'm impressed. And on the flag of Zvulun, you know, every Shevet has its degel. A merchant ship, but what was the color on the outside of the merchant ship? The background color of the flag? It was white. It was the only flag that had to be white on the outside. And the Medrash says, why white? Because when you're involved in the world of business, you've got to be pure, you've got to be clean. There's no room for scandals, no room for people to even to suspect you. It's interesting. You know the phrase, I think we got it from the Brits, when there's smoke, there's fire. What it means is a person has to avoid even smoke. He shouldn't even do something which might lead others to suspect him of a scandal. We had in the United States, I don't know if you heard about it, a couple of years ago, a major scandal. It put a black blotch on the Jewish community. It's called the Madoff scandal. Madoff is now sitting where he has to be sitting, and you won't meet him on the streets. I don't even know if you get visitation rights. Okay. There are literally institutions that went down the tubes because they were being supported by this money. That's what I call Zvulun with a black color on the outside. Klal Yisrael, the people of Israel, have to be very clean, very pure, no scandals. And that's what brings, you know, scandals bring a black blotch onto Klal Yisrael. It's a tremendous Chil Hashem. Rav tells us at the end of Gemara Yuma, he wouldn't enter into a store and buy on credit. Why? Because people around him might suspect him of walking out with merchandise without paying for it. They didn't know that he had credit. So imagine, the greater you are in Chachma, the greater your role in leadership, the more demanding the Torah is with regard to this pasuk. V'yisem nekiyim. Now watch this. The pasuk divides into two parts. We'll skip for a moment to the second part. The second part is Mi Yisrael. Mi Yisrael is what we call mitzvot bein adam lechaveru. With regard to interpersonal relationships, a person has to be very clean. He has to avoid any sort of suspicion and any sort of what's called chashad. If you have to have a pen and you're writing down key words that'll help you throughout Shas, because I know most of the people here in this room are studying Shas. Correct, Jeremy? You're on the verge of finishing Shas, right? So the most important word we have to know here is chashad. Chet shin dalet. What does chashad mean?
Suspicion.
You have to avoid chashad. And that is derived from this pasuk, v'yisem nekiyim miYisrael. In all your dealings with other Jews, you have to be completely naki, clean from any chashad, any suspicion. Then it says, May Hashem. May Hashem refers to which category of mitzvahs?
Bein
Adam L'Makom. And in Bein Adam L'Makom, you have to be very careful to make sure that no one would suspect you of violating some sort of an obligation, a mitzvah, whether it's ritual, even if it has to do with Beit HaKnesset. Imagine we're going to come up with the halach of a person who walks by a Beit Knesset when everyone's davening inside. And what does it look like to the onlooker, to the spectator? He's not interested in what?
In joining
and davening. That's V'yisem Nekiyim Hashem. Or let's say a person would light Ner Chanukah in such a way that no one could see his Ner Chanukah. People pass by his house and there's, lo and behold, there's no Ner Chanukah there. That's V'yisem Nekiyim Hashem. People are going to suspect you. That's called chashad. Do you remember the word chashad? Don't forget that word chashad. Let's say, for example, you know, there's something called chalav shkevim. Who knows what chalav shkevim is?
Almond
milk, right. It looks exactly like milk. You could actually crush almonds and they look like milk. So a man takes a meat steak and he pours almond milk on it.
They use before soy milk.
Correct, before soy milk. Soy milk is probably the same farmer. So what does the onlooker, the spectator think?
He's having milk, yeah.
He thinks you're having steak with milk. You know, that's okay for McDonald's, but not okay for a Jew who's observant of mitzvah. So therefore, chashad kicks in. All these laws of chashad are derived from Parshas Matos, where the Torah says, V'yisem nekiyim me'ashem u'miyisrael. And so we see, halacha lemaisa, this is actually practical, that a person in all his behavior has to be very clean, upright. Not only klapei mailah towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also bein adam lechaver klapei Yisrael, Hashem umi Yisrael, Hashem umi Yisrael. Now the Chasam Sofer has a joke. You know, it's rare that you find jokes in the Chasam Sofer. But the Chasam Sofer says that, you know what, it's impossible. It's everybody is going to suspect you. There's no one person who could ever achieve this goal that he won't come under some suspicion. Who is the greatest of all Jews?
Moshe Rabbeinu.
Even Moshe Rabbeinu, they suspected him. Chazal say that even though the Torah says, Lo kam navi od ke Moshe, Moshe is called the Adon HaNavim, the master of all prophets. Nevertheless, he'll izu olav laz. Okay, this is another word for chashad. Laz when they speak about you in a very disparaging way because they suspect you of something. Says Rav Chasam Sofer, who could ever get to the level of Nekiyim Yisrael, where every Jew thinks, oh, he's pure, he's l'shem shamayim, everything he does. Yeah. Last week, which is yesterday, I should say, we had Parshas Pinchas. What do they suspect Pinchas of?
Murder.
Avodah Zorah. They said that his grandfather on his mother's side was Mefate Magolim Avodah Zorah. They suspected him of wanting to have the same kind of immoral relations, which is Gilui Arayos, that Cosby had with Zimri. He was under attack from everyone. Because Kanoim Pogobo, you have to be a tzaddik, you have to be pure, you have to be noki. They wondered whether Pinchas didn't have some sort of vested interest over here. And therefore, says the Chasam Sofer, this pasuk, V'yisem Nekiyim, is not a mandate. It's not what we call a command or a mitzvah. It's a bracha. It's a divine blessing. Hashem says, you know what? B'nei Gad, B'nei Reuven, you deserve a blessing. Because really you are motivated by the right cause. You want to come together with B'nai Yisrael to fight the battles, conquer the land, and you want to settle here on the other side of the Yarden. You have pure motivations, but you're going to come under attack, under barrage. They're going to suspect you. Well, you're interested in finances, you don't care about the land of Israel, you don't care about the people. So Hashem says, I know, God says, I know that you have pure motivations. I am going to bestow upon you a bracha of the Yis and the Kiv. You'll be clean. You won't be suspect. Everyone will rely on you and trust you. Not only may Hashem, I know what's in your hearts, but even the Yisrael. However, leaving out the funny joke of the Chassam Sofer, the all of Chazal, from beginning to end, from A until Z, let's get the Z right, okay? It is all a mitzvah. This is a tzivu. V'yisem nekiyem me'ashem u'mi'yisrael is a mitzvah. It's an obligation. And we'll start with the Mishnah in Shkolim. Of all the people who come under suspicion in the various groups and responsibilities that fall on different groups of Klal Yisrael, which group is the most, comes under the most suspicion? What?
The Shulchanim.
Correct. The money, the people involved with money. The people collecting funds. They're collecting stock. Because all of a sudden, you know what? The cheshbon doesn't shtim. Something in the cashier doesn't calculate well. Maybe they pocketed some money. So the Mishnah says, Ein ator nichnas lo bepargot chofus v'lo b'minal v'lo v'sandal v'lo b'tfilin v'lo b'kmiya shem ya'ani v'yomer ma'on al-lishka ani o shem ya'ashir v'yomer mitrumas al-lishka ha'ashir. A person should make sure that when he goes into the treasury, no one could suspect him of taking money. Adam tzirich liot latzeit yidei chofus min abrios. Imagine the Mishnah itself codifies this pasuk in Parshas Matos to teach us how there are such strict laws about going into these places where people will think that maybe he took money. You know, you want to get change. You know, does it happen to you, Rabbi said, you have a 50 shekel note? And you want to contribute only 20 shekels. You ask for 30 shekel change, right? But what happens is the man goes into the treasury. Nobody on the outside knows that he was getting change. And he comes out with a bundle of money, a lot of bills. Is then people are going to think that, you know what, he's smuggling some money, he's embezzling, he's putting it into his pocket. And therefore, not only that, the law requires that he goes in. You see, back in the day, they had different types of apparel. There were things with pockets, like we have today, and then there were things without pockets. You know, certain robes.
Tachrichim.
Well, tachrichim, yeah, those will leave for after 120. But anyway, there was some begadim that had no pockets to them. Lo kisim, without pockets. There's a word for it in English, but I'm forgetting it now. So if he has to go in to the treasury, no pockets, because people would suspect him of pocketing money. Now I want you to turn to page 138. And now we get to the law of tzedakah. This is a Tosefta in the fourth parak of Peah. You have page 138? Ein rashayim lifrosh zeh mizeh. Gaboy tzedakah, have to go in pairs. It's what we call the buddy system. You remember when we used to go to camp and they told you when you go swimming you have to have a buddy?
Sure.
You remember that? No? The buddy system. You know, two people pick up their hands, the buddies. So when it comes to Gavoy Tztoku collecting money on behalf of the community, they have to go in pairs. Afilu nasan lo chaveru bo shu chayev lo. Afilu, you might, and be very careful. Sometimes, you know, amongst these two partners, you know, these two gaboyim who are buddies here, one owes a debt to the other one, so he wants to take out a bill and pay the debt. Well, somebody on the outside, the spectator, might think They're taking money from the treasury. Afilu matzamos baderech. Imagine when they're on their official role as gaboyim stuck, they're not allowed to pick up money that they find laying in the streets because people think that money was taken from the treasury. Shenemar, and the Tosefta in there quotes the pasuk. You can guess the Yisem Nekiyim Lifnei Hashem Mi Hashem Umi Yisrael. So we see clearly from two sources in the Tanoim, we didn't even get to the Gemaris and the Poskim, that the Chassam Sofer's joke was very funny, but the halacha is a mitzvah, and there's a mandate here that requires us to do our utmost to make sure we've covered our bases. There's no room for chashad. And the Torah Paskins in Yoredei and Hilchas Tzedakah Siman Reish Nun Vav. Gaboyt stokak sherim ein medagdim achreyam mikomakom kidei shiyu nekiyim me'ashem umi Yisrael tov lehem sheyitnu cheshbon. Technically, according to strict law, the gaboyt stokah who are accepted by the community as reliable and trustworthy do not have to give a cheshbon. They don't have to show the books. But says the Torah, nevertheless, although the halacha doesn't strictly require it, we highly recommend that they have a calculated, the books are very calculated, like you pay how do you say in English, a roeh cheshbon, an accountant, right? You pay the accountant to take care of all your assets and deficits. It should be accounting sheet. And the Bach says that mashkatava tour, what the tour writes, kideshu nekiyim Hashem Yisrael. Ulai lomdu mi Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu collected all the contributions for the building of the Mishkan, then he had to keep a cheshbon. And even though Moshe Rabbeinu is obviously trustworthy, nevertheless, he submitted a calculation, a sheet, that listed and enumerated all the contributions to Klal Yisrael. And here we get to the third paragraph, which starts with the words Nekudama and Yenet. It's very interesting. How long did it take the people of Israel to conquer the land? How long was the military battle? 7 years. And then another 7 years for what? For Chiluk. Chiluk means Yerusha. Yerusha means to divvy up the land so that every Shevet would inherit a portion of the land. And then within the Shvat of each Mishpach, each family would get its Chiluk. And therefore, when Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven agreed and committed themselves to conquer the land, that was a commitment for how many years? Because they said that we will go chalutzim in the front lines until the last battle is won. How many years is that?
14 years.
No, the last battle, I'm saying.
Seven
years, right? So it was a 7-year commitment to be in the front lines of the battlefield. Now, after the 7 years, we have a 7-year period of what? Chaluka. What does chaluka mean? To divide up the land. They didn't have to stay in the land for that. They had their own land outside of the western border of the Yarden. They could have gone back and resumed their family lives with their wives, their children. After all, they lived up to their commitment. Ulam. Neragnim means those who sort of send out bad messages. They start speaking derogatory. Look at these guys. They're already going back to settle their land, to live comfortably in their land. Be owed while we are here in the land and we haven't even divvied up the land. We haven't even gotten an opportunity to settle down in the land. We don't even have our chalukah yet. And Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven said, you know what? We're going to extend our stay in the land for another 7 years. If you owned a hotel on the eastern bank of the river, you could really make a major, what we call it, a killing. Because imagine 2.5 shvatim are looking to stay for another 7 years in the land. Now you go online to this thing called Airbnb. What's it called?
Airbnb.
Airbnb. Bed and breakfast. Yeah, B&B. and then you'll get a deal. You know, you have to compare prices and this and that. But it was a great opportunity for the people of Israel. But they again, you know, the people of Israel weren't setting up hotels yet at this point. You know, they it wasn't like Monopoly. They didn't even have.
And this woman named Rahab had one.
Say it again?
I heard this woman named Rahab had one.
Yeah, but she was on the other team. You know, I mean, she, thank God she was with us. But now we go to the Gemara and Shabbos. Daf Chav Gimel. Rabbosai, what's the famous sugya of Ner Chanukah? Where do I find Ner Chanukah? There's no Masechta Chanukah. There's a Masechta Megillah, but there's no Masechta Chanukah. I don't know why Chanukah got the raw end of the deal. So the historians have a terrible thing. They want to say that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi didn't want to codify the laws of Chanukah because he came from Shevet Yehuda and the Hashmonaim usurped the Malchus. But okay, that's only the scholars over there, up the block. You know, that's what they want to say. Truth is that Rebbe does codify Chanukah, but not in Masechta Chanukah. Not even in Masechta Shabbos. I'm talking Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, that's Mishnayos. In Bava Kamma. And that's the case of the Gamal Sheish Bo Pishtan, and it pushes itself into the Chanut, and there's an Er Chanukah that's lit in the Chanut. No doubt the Chabadnikim were going around from one store to the other, lighting the Neris Chanukah, and as a result, the whole store went up in smoke. Mishi Yesh Lo Chatzer Shel Shnei Ptochim. Jeremy, can you help me out over here? What street do you live on in Chutz Laretz? I mean, when you're there to visit, yeah. Or in Manchester. What's it called? Give me a name of a street.
East Downs Road.
East Downs Road, okay. Now, imagine that, I don't know if this is true, that in East Downs Road, there are private homes on the street. Okay. But now the next one is going to have to be real, you have to really use your imagination. Imagine that these homes on East Downs Road take up a very large area, such that if someone is walking on this side, what he sees is this house on East Downs Road, and someone who's walking on this side sees the same house. In other words, there's no backyard here with another house that would separate the road here on the right from the road here on the right. Do you follow my point? Now, if this guy, we'll call him Yankel Beryl. You heard of him? Yankel Beryl. It's just a name I made up. Yankel Beryl. Now, he owns a house on East Downs Road, and he lights his Ner Chanukah over here. But somebody walking on the other side of East Downs Road doesn't see the Ner Chanukah that's facing that part of the house. What does he suspect you of? Or what does he suspect Yankel Beryl of?
Not
lighting. That he didn't light Ner Chanukah. Mishi yesh lo chatzer im shnei ptochim. So there are two openings and two windows that he could have on both sides, on this road and that road. Chayav lahadlik Ner Chanukah b'shnei ptochim. On both ends. Mishum ha. And what's the next word?
Chashad.
You remember that word chashad? Don't forget that word chashad. So I have a question for you, my friends. Let's say that I lit Ner Chanukah on this side, you know, facing, we'll call it the west. Now, somebody who's walking on the east, he doesn't see my Ner Chanukah because I didn't light a second Ner Chanukah. So I violated what mitzvah? V'yisem nekiyim me'ashem u'me'yisrael. Now I say, oh no, I forgot to light on the other side. So now I light on the other side. What would you say? Do I make a bracha on it or not?
No.
So it's a machlokas between the Prima Gadim and the Ritva. The Prima Gadim, and the Beis Halevi has a long discussion about this, says you should make a bracha. And all the other mefarshim, they yell and scream like Zev said, why don't we should not be making a bracha. Why not? Zev, help me out here, please.
You've already lit.
Well, okay, I've already lit, but I'm obligated to light on the other side now. But why don't I make a bracha on the other side?
Should be.
One of them will be a bracha levatala.
No, but look, what happens if, let's say, I implement a mitzvah and then I realize I didn't do a good job? I'll give you an example. Let's say on Leil Pesach, early adult. So now I did my bedikah in one house. And now I remember that there's another house and that also needs a bedikah. Will I make another bracha?
Well,
Absolutely, I for sure will make another bracha, because that second house engenders a mitzvah b'dikas chametz. Again, if I would have thought it all out beforehand, I would have had in mind both homes with one bracha, although even that's very tricky because there might be a hefsek halicha from one house to the other. But certainly in this case where I finish my bedika, and now I wake up and I remind myself I have another house to be bodek, or let's say a man shechts an animal. So what bracha does he make before he slaughters the animal? Asher kishonim tzolsa tzivanu al ha... You guessed it, shechita. You guessed it.
Yeah.
I like your Asher Yashir. So after he says the bracha on shechita, somebody brings him another animal. So what does he do with the other animal? Makes another bracha on shechita. Why? Because it's a new machayv, a new mitzvah. But the yisem nekiyim may Hashem lekech, I would say, is not a new mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. It's only a mitzvah of what? Of chashak. So all the posts can gang up on the Prima Gadim and they say, no, you don't make a bracha on the second Pesach because that's Mishum Chashat. Now again, I don't know if anyone here in the audience is familiar with the difference between a Kiyum essay and an Iser essay. Is that meaningful for you?
Yeah.
So do you make a bracha on an Iser essay? We don't make a bracha on an Iser essay. An Iser essay is really a violation of a lav. Sometimes the Torah formulates the lav in terms of an essay. Right? Like the Torah says, for example, it says, Lo sosiru mimenu ad boker. You have to eat the meat of the karban during its allotted time and don't leave over anything until the next day. So if, let's say, I was eating that last piece of basar in order to avoid the losaseh of Lo sosiru mimenu ad boker, would I make a brach on that? You don't make a bracha on a los essay. You only make a bracha on an essay. So here, all the poskim gang up on the Prima Gadim and they say, the Torah says, I'm not allowed to leave this Pesach without an Ner Chanukah. Jeremy, I see what you mean. It's really hot in here. What can we do? Can we speak to Rabbi Wexler maybe? Would he would have
been? Open the door.
Should we open the door? Because everyone's falling asleep on me here and I'm also getting tired.
It's a trance.
Yeah.
Brother,
there's
a fire between the stores.
Okay. So we're gonna, you know, I was hoping to call in the cavalry here. You know, when the American Revolution broke out, so they said the Brits are coming. You know? So I was hoping the Brits are coming, but I think the Brits gave up too. Did you ever hear Paul Revere? Nobody. No. Paul Revere was, you know, the Brits attacked Boston. Boston was the center of the rebellion, you know, against the Brits. Yeah, the Boston Tea Party. So what happened was, when the Brits started coming to Boston, they came over by ship. And Paul Revere was running through the streets. He had a lantern and he was yelling, "The Brits are coming," to wake up the Americans, you know, so that, for the rebellion against the Brits. Okay. In any event, the Brits are not coming, so we'll have to survive without them here. But what I'd like you to see is the bottom paragraph on page 138. And there it says the following, that people will look at this Petach, they won't see a Ner Chanukah. They'll suspect him that he didn't light Chanukah. Good. So he has to light two candles, one on each side. And apparently the Prima Gadim says you make a bracha on the other side because Chashad now generates a mitzvah saseh, and he tells you what's considered a chatz and what's a bias for Ner Chanukah. It's interesting how we use the v'yisem nekiyim as a shiur in the mitzvah to define the nature of the mitzvah. Now we have a case in Peah. Now where do you leave Peah?
The edge
field. At the edge of your field. But what happens if someone sees that you didn't leave Peah at the edge of your field? Little does he know that you left Peah on the other edge of the field. So it's unbelievable. Mishum v'yisem nekiyim, he's got to leave Peah on both ends of the field.
Is that an halacha?
And the Gemara says it la'alokh. If you take a look here, take a look here. Oh, I'm so sorry. You, good catch, though. Good catch.
Hanukkah is very special, outstanding.
Well, wait, before you make your comments, let's just read the text so we know we're on the same page. You have this, Mipnei? Mipnei HaChashad, Shelo yu ovrim v'shovim omrim tavo me'ara. Then there should be a curse on someone. Shelo iniach peah b'sadeh. Nobody knows that he left peah. Now, Rabosai, there are complicated laws about peah. Let's say, for example, if I were to leave peah in the middle of my field, smack in the middle, would I be yotzi in the midst of peah? No. But what happens if I give a gift to someone and nobody knows about this gift, or I make part of my field hefker and people can't see it because it's physically located in the middle of my field? Actually, I'm yotzi in the midst of peah because that is the peah of my field, because I sold the other half to another buyer. So the law is he's got to be mafrish peah in what everybody recognizes as the end of his field, the corner of his field. So Rabosai, how many examples of Yis and Nekiyim do we have? We started with the halach of Gabay Tzedakah, a person who's going into the treasury. We went on to the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. We had the case of Peah. And we also had the Bnei Gad, Bnei Ruvain, who remained in Eretz Canaan, in Eretz Yisrael, for another 7 years. So people shouldn't think, oh, these guys are big shots. You know, they want to live the comfortable life of luxury. And that's the downing thing. And then he says, the Mishnah tells us in Avos, Hevidan es chaver lekaf schus. So I have a responsibility to make sure that I judge you favorably, as we say.
No suspicion.
Correct, no suspicion. So it's very odd here. On the one hand, I'm passing your house on Downing, and then I'm thinking, well, you didn't light candles. What was the name of the street, Jeremy? East Downing?
East Downs Road.
Oh, East Downs, not Downing. Who lives on Downing?
Downing Street.
That's a famous street, isn't it? Okay. I'm not so okay. Fine. They say that England is the last vestige of malchus of kingship in Israel. You know, this Buckingham Palace place and all that stuff. You know, with the changing. Fine. So he says, look, if I don't see a Ner Chanukah in that petach, I should be judging you favorably and assume that you lit a little bit earlier that night, or you lit on the other side of East Downs Street, wherever East Downs Road. And then Peah. I don't see Peah. Where's your Peah? So I should assume maybe you put Peah there and I didn't see it. I didn't go through your whole field and this, that, and the other thing. So why do we have to worry? Why do I have to be concerned if I didn't leave Peah on the other end of my field, if I didn't light Ner Chanukah on the other Pesach? Why don't I shift the responsibility over to the spectator, the onlooker, and say, he's got to be Dan Milakav Schus? And it's unbelievable that the Beit Yosef points out that there's another problem here. There's a contradiction between two dinim that are paskin in halach. One din is with regard to someone who davened in the morning very early. Now he went to sleep because he got up very early. Davened vasikin. And when he wakes up in his house, nobody knows that he davened vasikin. So does he have to assume that people are going to suspect him that he didn't daven and he went back to sleep and now he gets up and he's not davening? Well, the truth is that the Gemara says in Masechet Brachos Daf Ches, and now we have a number of people in this room who are absolute experts in Masechet Brachos, and they'll all remember the Gemara they learned on Daf Ches Amid Beis, right? You learned Daf Ches Amid Beis, and the Gemara says you shouldn't pass the opening of a Beit Knesset, the entry into a Beit Knesset, b'shash atzibur mispalin. And they quote Rav Yishuv ben Levi as saying, "Asul oli adam, asul lavar yavar achrei Beit HaKnesset b'shash atzibur mispalin." And why is that?
Because they think you're not going to come at all.
Correct. And what's that called in one word with three letters? Chashad. That's chashad. And Abai says, you know what, that only applies if there's no other entry into the Beit Knesset. If there's another way of getting into the Beit Knesset, that's okay. Why? Because then people can assume that he didn't go in that way, but he went in that way. And therefore, everybody understands that he's davening. He's not going. Now, in the case of Ner Chanukah, even if you have another petach, we still suspect you that you didn't light in the other petach. But in the case of the Beit HaKnesset, it says that if there's another entry to the Beit HaKnesset, then people have to figure out that you came in or you went in or you will go in through the other Betach. So how far do we go? So the Beit Yosef on the bottom of page 139 gives two answers to this question. His first answer is, nobody's going to be suspect a person of violating what's called prikas ol. Prikas ol means a guy doesn't daven. Imagine a Jew that doesn't daven. I know, for example, the community that I was raised in, most of the people were not Shomer Shabbos, but they came to daven. And if they didn't come on a regular basis, they came for Yontif. They came for Yom Kippur, they came for Rosh Hashanah. So who's going to suspect a Jew that he doesn't come to Daven? But near Chanukah, okay, it's a mitzvah, but it's only Derabbanan. And if you're Mavata, you're non-fulfillment, non-compliance, you know, you're not a Porek all. You're not someone who, so to speak, chucks it all and rebels against the Jewish religion. I'm not so excited about that answer to the Beit Yosef, because I think someone who doesn't like near Chanukah is a serious violator, even though it's only Derabbanan. I don't know if you ever heard of the Federation. In America, there's a whole organization that collects funds for Jewish causes. So the Federation once did a census in New York City. At that time, New York City was boasting 2 million Jews. And they did a census. How many Jews light candles on Friday night? 17, and then it went up, I think, to 19% of New York Jews would fulfill the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos. How many Jews do you think fulfill the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? 79%. Again, it was a different kind of a Ner Chanukah, you know, than you and I are familiar with. You know, they let the electric lights. Have you seen them? Of course, to be politically correct, you know, you'll find many stores in New York where next to the Chanukiah, what they call it, you know, the lamp, there's another kind of lights also. And this they do in the White House too. It's not on Downing, but it's in Washington, D.C. And this means all fair time to all religions. But now I look at the Beit Yosef's second answer. He says, Ner Chanukah olem mamon yesh bo chisaron kis ha-shemen v'apsila mash'enkin b'knisa v'es ha-knes l'spala ha-reza lo ola kesem b'makom sheyesh chisaron kis chashid odom shlo yases ha-mitzvah v'mitzvah she-nases b'chinam ein chashad. This is unbelievable. To come to shul doesn't have to cost you anything, unless they charge you membership fees. But to light Chanukah back in the day was an expensive operation. You have to pay for the psilos, you have to pay for the shemen, you have to pay for the Chanukiah. It was an expensive operation. So people were very suspicious that Jews didn't want to spend money on their Chanukah. I find this answer very difficult. If you take a look, he says, Bittelsman gam shavu kesef. Person goes to shul and he can't work because he spends an hour in synagogue, and if people don't stand, you know, they don't start shul on time, it could schlep along. If the rabbi's drasha goes too late, you know, and they want to this, you know, we're all sorts of. He says, on the other hand, how long does it take to light Ner Chanukah? It doesn't take that long. It's not like it has to extend for hours and hours. So again, we have two questions now to answer. Question number one is, why do I have to worry about V'yisam Nikiyim? Let them figure out, live up to their responsibility of being Dan L'kaf Schus, and rack their brains and figure out how to reconcile my behavior, which looks suspicious, with the observance of the mitzvahs. And the second question is, why when it comes to Beit HaKnesset, we don't have to worry as long as there's another opening, an entry into the Beit Knesset. Forget about V'yisam Nikiyim. I can walk by the main entry. But in the case of Ner Chanukah, there are two sides to East Down Road, then I have to light on both sides. So we have two questions. The third question is on page 140. This is the famous Chachma Shlomo of Reb Shlomo Kluger. In Ner Chanukah, the halach is kovsa ein zokitla. It means if the light goes out, do I have to rekindle it?
No.
No, technically I don't have to rekindle it. So he's saying, wait a minute. The guy passes by my house, he doesn't see a Ner Chanukah. Right? There's still time to light Ner Chanukah. Why don't I have to light the Ner Chanukah, rekindle it? Midin Chashad. He's going to suspect me of not lighting Ner Chanukah. That's the kasha of Rav Shlomo Kluger. Why is it Kavsa Ein Zakut La? And based on this kasha of Rav Shlomo Kluger, the Beis HaLevi was Mechadish, that even though Kavsa Ein Zakut La, that's as far as the mitzvah of Chanukah is concerned, as far as the din of Nisan Nekiyim, you're going to have to relight the candle, but without a bracha. Fine. The Gemara tells us in many different situations that there is no chshad. For example, if there's another entry into the Beis HaKnesses. Or for example, a person is walking through the streets and he's got tefillin on his head. If he's wearing tefillin, we don't have to suspect him. And even if he doesn't go into the synagogue, we assume he's gonna daven. A person who wears tefillin on his head is certainly going to daven. Have you ever seen Rabbi say people walking the streets with tefillin on? You saw it?
Yeah.
Where in Manchester they have such a thing?
No,
only here in the holy city of Yerushalayim. I've seen people actually drive cars wearing tefillin. That's why. I don't know if it's so much recommended, but I've seen it. You know the famous story about Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, the founder of the Musa movement. He was walking by. And he saw a Jew was fixing his wagon. You know, one of the wheels had come off the wagon. And he was wearing his talisman tefillin, laying on the floor, and putting with the grease, you know, greasing his thing. So Rabbi Saul turned to heaven. Some say without Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, Rabbi Dishma. He turned to heaven and said, look at your Jews. Even when they're fixing their wagons, they still want to wear tefillin.
You know,
he says in Ner Chanukah we don't find that there is an obligation to rekindle the light even after it goes out, right? Even though Kovsa, nevertheless, Ein Zokik Lo. Now, who knows what a Ben Pkua is? That's on the bottom of your page 140.
Ben Pkua.
Ben Pkua. Yeah. What's a Ben Pkua, Harvey? Can you tell me?
It's a behemoth.
Yeah.
Doesn't need shoes.
And why not? Just to test you a little bit.
Because its mother had
shechita. Excellent, beautiful. So we shechted the mother was pregnant, and then after the shechita we were able to save the fetus. Now is walking on all fours, it's a healthy animal, it doesn't need shechita. The shechita, the mother, works for the flood, because the flood is uber yerachim, is part of the mother's body.
Also the offspring should Ben Pekuas get together, the offspring raise a whole herd.
That's the old kasha, you know, why can we avoid Shrita today? We just raise a whole herd of Ben Pekuas.
Is that story of Joseph?
I don't know about Joseph. That was the case of Ben Pekuas. Wasn't that Avraham Menachai?
No, he reported that to his father.
That they were eating Avraham Menachai?
Ben Pekuas.
Oh, of a Ben Pekuas? It's good.
Oh,
I'm very impressed.
Top shear, though.
You're in the top shear. So now the question is, do you need shechita on a ben pkur? So the Chachamim say you need shechita on a ben pkur because of chashat. People don't know that this animal already had shechita, it's walking on all fours, and it was nitar b'shechitas ima. We're on page 141 if you're following inside. And here we have machlokas between Rabbi Kiveger and the other poskim based on the Tshuvas HaRashba. Rabbi Kiveger says, "Linyan bracha mevarchin." We make a bracha on a ben pkuah, and the Besamim Rush, which is attributed a little bit faulty to the Rush, they right? Okay, I didn't want to say it explicitly, but since you said it, Ari, okay. Anyway, he says not to make a bracha. So the question is, if we're doing a Maisa Mitzvah only because of Maris Ayin, should we make a bracha, should we not make a bracha? Rabbi Kiveger seems to assume we do make a bracha, but in the case of Ner Chanukah Mishum Chashad, the poskim say we don't make a bracha. So the question here is as follows. So let's just summarize our questions. Number one, this is in the middle of your page 141. As far as lighting candles in the second Petach, which l'chor is parallel to shechting ben pkua, and it's only mishum chashad, is there room for a bracha, or is there not room for a bracha? Rabbi Kiveger seems to assume, based on the Tshuvas HaRashba, but there is a bracha on shechitas ben pkua. In the case of ner, mishum chashad, in a chotz sheish bo shnei psachim, we assume there is no bracha.
But there is an assumption that there has to be a shechita done.
Right. That's why, you know, I don't know if this whole solution about raising a herd of Empkua, I mean, on one level it'll help us because you'll avoid a lot of the Doraisa problems, you know, because Safik Darabonu Lekul. But on the other hand, in actuality, we are going to need Shchit on a Empkua. The entire Simon Yud-Gimel in Yoredeya is dedicated to the laws of Empkua. It's a very Lomdisha Sugya.
You would also not be able to eat some of the parts of the animal because of the Chashud story as well.
There was Shechita, there wasn't Shechita. What's your case?
So say there was Shechita.
There was Shechita.
There has to be, right? So, but then what about there's certain forbidden parts of the animal, forbidden fats and the forbidden...
Yeah, those parts I think are forbidden even in the case of Ben Pekur. Ah. So that you won't gain if you'll only gain the veil. There's no Easter in the veil.
Right, so
but Chelev and so forth and so on, that you'll have. Now he asks a different question. If a person is eating from Ben Pekur, why can't he just wave a banner and on the banner is written that this is a Ben Pekur? And if that be the case, wouldn't that remove the problem of Chashad or Ner Chanukah, for example? Why can't he just go into the other Petach, put a sign and says, you know, my Ner Chanukah, follow the arrow, you know, around the side of the room? The answer is, okay, now we're up to the breakthrough. There's a general principle called the Yisem Nekiyah Me'Hashem U'Me'Yisrael. The Torah is telling us to make sure to be worried about the fact that others, the spectators, might suspect us of doing some evil.
Is this the same as Marat Ayin then?
Oh, that's what he wants to point out. That maybe this is not the same as Marat Ayin. This is a general rule called the Yisem Nekiyim Me'Hashem U'Me'Yisrael. Everyone has to use his own logic here to think far in advance, down the line, anticipate what problems might arise. And in such a case, he doesn't have to come up with an idea that someone who's very suspicious by nature, you know, is Dafka trying deliberately to come up with some bad, you know, bad mouth you and derogatory statements. That's not what we're worried about. We're worried about what's called Adam Savir, meaning a logical, normal situation that might arise. And in those cases, it's a V'yisem Nekiyah Me'Hashem U'Me'Yisrael. That's number one. Okay, that's the first category. Now again, it doesn't mean you have to be paranoid. You know, every moment you're walking down the street, you're looking over your shoulder to think, oh, who's going to suspect me of what? You know, there's certain neighborhoods. I was always wondering, you know, are you allowed to move through, like, you've never been to Amsterdam, but if you know, there's certain places you can't go in Amsterdam, you know. But let's say, I don't know, you have to go there or something, you know. Red light. Who said anything about red light?
Oh, sure. Sorry.
Okay. Let's not get too, you know, graphic over here. All right. So, you know, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. Let's say if you want to go to an all-male beach, but you have to pass through the place where there are both men and women in the beach, are you allowed to pass there? You know, there's a certain sense of paranoia that somebody might see me go by, they think I'm on the way to this mixed beach, you know, heaven forbid. So Rabbi Moshe tries to work it out that you don't have to be so paranoid about it.
Well, is there the shul not far from the old... Safari shul, the very old shul. So people see you walking.
So they'll assume you're going to the Safari shul.
Yeah.
Not in the way around. You went to the other way around. Okay. However, Rabbi Moshe, now we get to the second category. And that's on the bottom of your page 141. There are certain situations in which Chazal, the Chachamim, didn't leave it up to you to use your intelligence and make that evaluation. Will there be suspicion? Will there not be suspicion? They didn't leave it to this anarchy, this amorphous kind of hole that you decide. But they structured it. They, what's the word I'm looking? They legislated it. And that legislation is called a takana mishum chashat. Takana means they established it. They didn't want to leave it to any individual that'll find his way of figuring out whether he should do this, he shouldn't do this, he should avoid chashad or not, they made a takana, a very specific takana. For example, if a person says, you know what, when it comes to Ner Chanukah, I'll just put up a sign on the other side. Yeah, you know what, he may fulfill his obligation of the Yisa and the Kiyum in a general sense, but he didn't fulfill the special takanas chazal that they established, that you have to light on both sides. You have to publicize the nest not only to those who are walking on the east side, but also those who are walking on the west side. And therefore they established, because of chashad, that the mitzvah of Pirsum HaNes expands itself to incorporate not only this Pesach on this side of the Chatzah, but the other Pesach on the other side of the Chatzah. And here, we have to oblige, we have to live up to the mandate of the Chachamim of their Takana. And if a Jew comes along and he says, well, you know what, I'm not impressed by this, it's irrelevant. Well, let's say, for example, a person lights a small candle. Now, as far as Ner Chanukah is concerned, can you fulfill your mitzvah with a small candle? Yes, you don't have to light a big, gigantic candle like they do outside of, you know, I assume on Downing Street, or at least in the U.S. Capitol. He says, "Ani rotzel aruch mofa anak. I want to make this into a public demonstration with a gigantic candle that'll last for, I don't know, a month. I want to make it into some sort of, you know, I'll hire a band, you know, and bring out the greatest singers and players and well." Such a person, even though he wants to expand his Pirsum HaNes in a very impressive way, but nevertheless, that's great. But that's not the way Chazal were metaken the mitzvah. The Chazal were metaken the mitzvah that you light a humble candle no matter what size it is. And all this is based on what's called a takana. When Chazal make a takana, we are obligated and obliged to live to the takana and observe the rules as formulated by this takana. Do we have a right to say, well, I don't understand why the Chazal made this takana in such a specific way, with those particular requirements? We don't understand the way the Chazal did. We can't say, well, I'm smarter than the Chachamim, I know the way it should be done. And therefore, once the Takana was enacted, we are absolutely obliged to implement the Takana the way it was formulated by Chazal. We can't find other ways that we think are better ways, Eitzos Acheros, to achieve what Chazal had in mind. And he writes the following. This is the paragraph that starts on page 142 with the words Ein Anu Yecholim, and he says, Odot HaBracha, with regard to making a bracha, Yesh Kan Takanat Chazal Hazokakot Bracha Bifnei Atzmo. In certain cases, the Chazal decided that you recite a bracha. For example, in the case of Shechitas Ben Pkua, according to the Rashba, Rav Kivega's Rashba, you require a bracha. There are other cases where the Chazal said, we're not going to require a bracha. And therefore, we can answer the question of Rav Shlomo Kluga, the Chochma Shlomo. He wanted to know what happens if the candle was extinguished. That's called Kavsa. And the halacha is Ein Zokaklo. We don't have to light the candle, relight it, rekindle it. Why not? Why not say chashad? And the answer is that mipnei chashad, we have a certain takana, and when that takana applies, we have to live up to this takana. For example, a chatzah sheyesh lo shnei psachim. But with regard to kavsa, ein zokik la. The answer is, according to Rav Shlomo Kluge's assumption, you don't have to rekindle the light. The takana was that there's no halach of chashad. He's already done the implemented his mitzvah. There's only one Pesach, and he lit in that Pesach. Yitachen, he says, it's very possible. Maybe the fact that, you know, people will look and they'll see that there's a Chanukiah there, although there's no candle there. Maybe they can see where it went out. Whatever it is, but the Chazal said, in this case, we don't have chashada. We're not going to establish that you have an obligation to light again. Now you'll ask me, well, what about the second petach? Maybe I could put a Hanukkah, a Chanukiah, a lamp, you know, in that petach. I'll even go ahead and I'll put a used, you know, used, how do you say in English, ptilah, a wick, you know, a wick that went out over there. The answer is that Chazal made a takon, a very specific legislation, and we can't change and digress from that that legislation. We can't find substitute methods of putting signs in the window or putting a chanukiah in the window. Ein l'shanos mitakanosa. In the case of a ner shekaba, for whatever reason, Chazal didn't make that takana. Therefore, we don't have to rekindle the light. But in the case of two ptachim, they made a takana. Now we can answer the question of the Beit Yosef. What's the difference between someone who walks by a Beit Knesset and the case of Ner Chanukah? In the case of a Beit Knesset, Chazal said that there's chashad if you pass by the Beit Knesset when the tzibur is davening. Rotik nu takana mesuyemet keitzad letzeit meachashad kak ishiru sheyesh kad chashad v'tzorech lizor luishomer v'yech luishomer is yaniach tefillin. Maybe if he wants to avoid this chashad, he wears tefillin. Yikach masof, if he has a very heavy burden and he starts running around with his burden. Every person, because this comes under the general halach of Yisim Nekiyim, a person has to judge and use his intelligence to decide when and how he could avoid any chashad. But it's not like the case of Ner Chanukah, where Chazal made a takana that each Pesach generates a chiyuv of pirsum anes, and you have to light a Ner Chanukah. Perhaps in the case of someone who's walking by a Beit Knesset, he can walk around with a sign on his chest that says Hitpalalti. I went to Vasikin at the Kotel. And that would be enough to remove chashad. That's under the general halach of Yisam Mekiyim. Or for example, if the synagogue has another petach, in all these cases we fulfill the Yisam Mekiyim. But a person cannot put up a sign and say, well, I lit on the other side. He hasn't fulfilled the specific takana. And therefore on both sides, and this is our final wrap-up operation on page 143, when we learn the halacha, we always have to analyze and study it from this perspective. Our investigation, our main question has to be, what is the halacha? Is the halacha of the Yisam Nekiyim? And the Shulchan Aruch is just pointing out, you know, buddy, you better be careful, because if you get into this situation, people might suspect you. Then we fall under the universal general rule and mandate of the Yisam Nekiyim, which requires us to use the best of our intelligence to understand when and how to avoid chashad. Or are we dealing with a halach in Shulchan Aruch, which is a takana, well formulated, specifically legislated, with details, with prate pratin, to tell us how and when we can fulfill this takana. And Amir Tzashem, if we'll be able to fulfill this command of the Yisam Nekiyim, then we'll find favor in the eyes of our fellow Jews. We'll avoid chas v'sholom any sort of akshus peh, any lazus fasayim. And if we're beloved and we find grace in the eyes of our fellow Jews, then certainly we'll find face in the eyes of Hashem as well. Ken yiratzon. Okay then? So thank you for staying. I mean, it was a long shiur, but I figured on a fast day to study a halachic topic, the source of which is here, Parshas Matos. That's a great achievement. And we covered many, many different areas of halach. Not only halach l'maisa in Chanukah, and we spoke about Peah and Staka, and we spoke about Beis HaKnesset, but this is a universal rule that has tremendously wide applications and a broad scope halach. And it's right here in Parshas. Thank you very much, Chazak v'Emunah.